Thank you. Please be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Southwest Bank versus Information Support.
May it please the court, Mr. Bruce Wilson will present arguments for the petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I actually usually get Bruce Willett pronounced like that, but it is Wilson. May it please the court, this case involves the application of the proportion responsibility statute to a claim for conversion under the Uniform Commercial Code, section 3.420. The claim arose out of a series of checks that were stolen by an employee of the plaintiff over a period of 22 months, were deposited into the employee's bank account at my client, Southwest Bank. Ultimately, most of the funds were withdrawn. The employee is now in federal prison. What happened is the employer sued the bank for conversion of the checks, seeking approximately $320,000 for the face amount of the checks. We sought to assert the availability of the proportion responsibility statute as a defense to this, and also sought to bring in the thief and a few others as additional defendants. The trial court said that the proportion responsibility statute was not available to us as a defense to a claim under section 3.420, and the Court of Appeals affirmed, saying that the proportion responsibility statute set forth in Chapter 33 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code does not apply to a UCC section 3.420 claim for conversion. The Court of Appeals held that there was in the Court of Appeals opinion, there was some kind of a discrete legislative fault scheme under the Uniform Commercial Code, and therefore the attempt by the legislature to adopt the proportion responsibility statute does not apply to a claim brought under Article 3 or 4 of the Texas Business and Commerce Code, and specifically dealing with Section 3.420. Now, we think the Court of Appeals was clearly erroneous in that respect, and I think it's very clear why. First of all, the legislature in 1995 spent a great deal of time and a great deal of effort to change the law in the area of tort claims. The statute that they adopted, which is the Chapter 33 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, states specifically that it applies to any cause of action based in tort. It also specifically states that the trier of fact as to each cause or claim asserted shall determine the percentage of responsibility allocated in whole numbers for the following persons with respect to each person's causing or contributing to cause in any way the harm for which recovery is sought, whether by negligent act or omission, by any defective or unreasonably dangerous product, or by any other conduct or activity that violates applicable legal standards.
But doesn't your argument undercut the entire UCC scheme? I mean, if you allow the thief to be submitted proportionately, I can't imagine a situation where 100% of fault wouldn't be apportioned to the thief. And therefore, the employer who is seeking the protect, or who the UCC protects, is without a remedy.
Well, no, I think I can conceive a jury coming back and actually allocating some of the loss to the bank and some of the loss to the thief, and maybe some of the loss to the employer, too. But I don't think it does. If you look at the law, first of all, under Section 1.103 of the Business and Commerce Code, the code specifically says unless displaced by a particular provision of this type, and there is nothing in Article 3 or Article 4 that says you can't bring in the thief. There's nothing in Article 3 or Article 4 that says you can't allocate responsibility to a responsible third party. It just isn't addressed. But Article 1.103 specifically says that unless displaced by the particular provisions of this title, then that this title, Article 3 and 4, Article 2, etc., are supplemented by that extra law. In addition, if you look at 3.404, which is really not before the court, because that involves a situation where there were, in fact, endorsements, and usually those are endorsements by an individual who has control of a bookkeeper or financial officer, somebody like that. the way that the Business and Commerce Code allocates responsibility, it says in the paragraph D of that section, if a person paying the instrument or taking it for value or for collection fails to exercise ordinary care or in paying or taking the instrument, the person bearing the loss may recover from the person failing to exercise ordinary care to the extent the failure to exercise ordinary care contributed to loss. Now,
but that's kind of my question. I mean, it seems like the legislature did specifically address proportionate responsibility in 3.404, 3.405, and 3.406. And just because they didn't think of this case or the universe, is that a reason for us to now impose a completely different proportionate responsibility statute on top of this?
Well, again, I think the Uniform Commercial Code opens it up to do that because of the way this 3.404
Well,
reads.
How do we pick and choose which sections of the UCC we apply proportionate responsibility to? Only where the legislature hasn't spoken, or
well, you're going to apply proportionate responsibility to tort claims. Claims that sound in tort, conversion claims. You're not going to apply them to warranty claims.
But these sections do cover, quote, tort claims, unquote.
Yes,
so
they do.
Which controls? If we apply it across the board to UCC tort claims,
well,
does the proportionate responsibility statute control notwithstanding what 3.405 and 3.406 say?
Well, again, I don't agree that there's necessarily conflict between those, but it does control. The proportionate responsibility does control because what happened when the legislature adopted the tort reform in 1995, they changed essentially the entire fabric upon which tort claims are dealt with. Before and back for years and years and years, centuries, joint and several liability was the rule. And I think that obviously the Uniform Commercial Code provisions were written just under the assumption, well, joint and several liability, that is the framework we're dealing with, and we're going to draft statutes that assume that's the framework. Well, the framework's changed. That's no longer the framework in this state. The framework in this state is proportionate responsibility, and you can bring in the responsible parties to allocate.
But I guess we have two statutes, both of which specifically address proportionate responsibility. I mean, the UCC does address it in some circumstances. And
yes.
It's kind of hard. Are you saying that it seems that we can't just say, we're going to have to say one governs over the other, period. I mean,
Again, I don't think there's an inconsistency if you look at 3.404. 3.404 says specifically the liability, in this case, say the bank, is they're responsible to the extent the failure to exercise ordinary care contributed to the loss. Now, if that's the standard, you can see a situation where a bank could say, I contribute the loss, and the jury could say 30%, 40%.
So why don't we just apply 3.404 in this case?
Because 3.404 doesn't apply to this case.
That's my point. The legislature said it applies in these cases, but didn't say all cases in the UCC. And we'd be going behind the legislature saying, well, now we've decided that you didn't really mean what you said. It had been applied in all cases, even though you chose not to apply it in all cases.
Well, except the legislature did do that. They said it applies to all causes of action based in tort. And they also said, specifically when you look at the definition of what allocation is, they say a duty created by law. Well, what else is 3.404, 3.405, 3.406, 3.420? That is a duty created by law. And you have to allocate under the regime that this legislature has adopted to the third party, the responsible third party, and allocate the percentage of liability among those parties. I think it's clear what the legislature intended.
One of the reasons behind the UCC is uniformity in these transactions.
Yes.
Has any other state in the country gone with your interpretation? Any other state that has proportionate responsibility statutes?
I checked Monday, and there were no cases that I could find where this issue had come up.
And in fact, state. Aren't there many cases that go the other way?
I haven't seen any cases that go the other way. What we have here, however, is again, and that goes back a little bit to the question of how uniform is the Uniform Commercial Code. There it is not particularly uniform. For example, 3.404, most states say a bank's liable only if its negligence substantially contributes to the acceptance of proportionate enforcement. Texas says they take out substantially, they just say contribute. So there are all kinds of variances going on here in the way that Business and Commerce Code is adopted in this state versus the way it's adopted in other states. And there, as we pointed out in the supplement to our brief, there are literally scores of differences that have been adopted by the various states to comply with the way that state sees its public policy. The way this state sees its public policy is we are going to allocate any tort claim to the parties who caused the loss, regardless of their solvency.
What about the two sections of the UCC that seem to say pretty strongly that you should not imply repeal by another statute?
Which section are we looking at?
Let's see. I didn't somebody's
1.104, I think, is what we're talking about. I think the justice is referring to 1.104. I mean, that says this title is treated as a general body intended as a unified coverage of its subject matter, and there's no question that's what it says. But again, the legislative intent clearly in this case was to apply in a tort situation, which this is clearly a tort situation, a proportionate responsibility scheme, and it applies to every tort. Look at that legislation. There is no way one can say the legislature didn't mean to apply every tort. And again, let's look at 3.420, for example. 3.420, the first sentence says, first sentence of 3.420 says, the law applicable to conversion of personal property applies to instruments. All right. No question that if I or a thief steals his cattle from an owner, sells the cattle to Mr. Smith, Mr. Smith slaughters the cattle and eats it, there's no question that that is a conversion, and there's no question that the owner can sue Mr. Smith. Now, and there's no question that Mr. Smith can say, wait a minute, the thief's responsible, partially, maybe totally, maybe the owner's responsible, partially, but I'm not the only one should take the hit on this kid in this situation. If that's what 3.420 says, then why doesn't that scenario under the proportionate responsibility apply to instruments? Because that's exactly what 3.420 says. It does apply to instruments. Again, I think we've got to focus, I think, again, on what the legislature was attempting to do here. And what they were attempting to do was solve a major problem, which has been going on, an attempt to solve and change the public policy of this state and perhaps eventually change the public policy of every state. But what we're doing here is we're saying, if you are involved in causing harm, regardless of your solvency, you are going to bear some responsibility. And just because my client happened to have deep pockets, that doesn't mean any more that they're responsible and bear the entire loss. That used to be the law, no question about it. It didn't matter whether Rasko, the thief, was in his lawsuit or not back in the old days when all we had was a contribution claim. But we don't have a contribution claim anymore. We have the right to say, jury, Ms. Rasko caused some of this harm, maybe 80% of it, maybe 40% of it, maybe 50% of it. Maybe we were negligent too. We probably were. Maybe we should have been more careful. I think a jury, this case is remanded, I think jury's probably going to allocate some loss to the bank. I don't know what percentage, but I think they're going to allocate some.
Are you worried, or are the MISI independent bankers worried about public trust and confidence in the banking system if they know that if their account ends up short in this type of circumstance, they're going to have to go through a trial process and hope the jury finds the bank more liable than the insolvent thief?
Well, of course, that's not this fact situation. None of the plaintiff's money, the plaintiff didn't have a bank account at Southwest. It was the thief had the bank account, so their account didn't really come up short. I think if you look at the proportionate responsibility statute and you look at the public policy of the state, I think what you're telling people who are in the situation, the plaintiffs, is you shouldn't hire people who've already been charged with committing the same crime, who you should have known had committed this crime because the name of the prior employer that she stole from was listed on her employment application. You should open your bank statements and see what's going on. The plaintiff didn't do that in this case. You should supervise your employees. You should check and see what's going on with your accounts receivable. This went on for 22 months. And I think if you're going to talk about fairness and what a person in business should expect, I mean, they should expect to take care of business first and be responsible for problems that they cause. Now, obviously, in the individual case, when one check goes through, that's probably not going to be really much allegation of loss, except probably just to the bank. But again, I think the purpose of this legislation, force responsibility, makes absolutely clear what the legislature wanted to do. They want to allocate loss based upon fault, not upon the ability to respond to a claim.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Jeff Cove will now present argument on behalf of the respondent.
Thank you. I'm Jeff Cobes here on behalf of Information Support Concepts, a small business up in my area, Tarrant County. We are asking the court today to either affirm the Court of Appeals decision, which affirmed the trial court decision, or to dismiss the petition as improvidently granted. The argument that the 95 amendments, the passage of the Proportional Responsibility Act, Chapter 33, applies to UCC is not a new argument. We've cited a case to the court from the San Antonio Court of Appeals where this issue was raised last year in connection with UCC warranty claims, which the UCC sets out and defines. And the San Antonio Court in that case also held that the Proportional Responsibility Statute did not apply. And the basis for its holding is it said in its opinion that the plaintiffs in that case who sought the application of proportionate responsibility to that case had not supplied them with a single Supreme Court case or any UCC case or UCC provision that would justify extending proportional responsibility to the UCC. And we believe that court was correct. We believe the Fort Worth court was correct in failing to extend proportional responsibility that far. I thought you had a question. Our argument, as we set forth in our brief, is really threefold. First of all, we don't believe that the plain language of Chapter 33 makes application to the UCC. Based on tort is the applicability section of Chapter 33. This is not based on tort. Now, a conversion claim is a classic common law tort, intentional tort action. But the UCC section that my client sought relief at the trial court level on is a statutory cause of action. The cases that we've cited in the brief indicate that to the extent the UCC has been adopted in specific areas and it's in conflict with old common law causes of action that the UCC controls. And it's important in this case for a couple of reasons. First, the damages are limited in this case from what a common law conversion would be. In other words, 3.420 limits the damages to the face amount of the instrument. It used to be the value, now it's the amount as evidenced by the instrument. There's no consequential damages, there's no special damages. In this case, there's no exemplary damages. So a common law conversion is different than a UCC conversion. It applies specifically to this type of action, and I think the court's aware of this from its earlier questions, but this is different from 3.404, 3.405, and 3.406 because these are missing endorsements. This is not a faithless employee case. This is not a situation where there was a failure to identify the person or there were forged endorsements or forged signatures. This is a case where there were no signatures. And that's important because when you look at the comments to 3.420 versus 3.405, for example, the commentators to the UCC spend a great deal of time talking about who's in the best position to catch this type of conduct. In the case now that the legislature has passed 3.405, where there's a fraudulent or a forged endorsement by an employee who's in a managerial position at an employer, the commentators indicate that the employer would be in the best position to detect that type of fraud that was going on, a managerial employee who is taking the checks and forging the company's name on them in order to negotiate them. Thus, there is some allocation set forth in the UCC in those types of situations. In the comment to 3.420, the UCC drafters indicate that when a check is negotiated to the bank with a missing endorsement, in those types of cases, which is our case, that it is the depository bank that's in the best position to catch that, and that is why the depository bank, in essence, has a type of strict liability under the UCC.
And you think that is irrespective of any complicity of the employer in the conduct?
Yes, Justice Hecht, and I think that's important in this case because, as we know from the UCC, claims such as contributory negligence are not permitted as a defense to 3.42 or conversion claims.
But even if the employer actually knew it was happening and just didn't do anything for whatever reason for a while, that still would not prevent recovery.
It's my position that it wouldn't, but we haven't addressed that in this case because there's no evidence that the employer knew. The evidence was that this lady was the mail opener, and she opened some of the checks, and they were all small checks, that she opened some of the checks as they came in or opened the mail, and that they never got to the employer that they would know about it. What was alleged that they should have known, and this is a should have known case, was that she had embezzled money or somehow defrauded her prior employer, and that a sufficient background check would have revealed that.
It just seems like it goes too far, although I think it's part of your position, that if the employer were actively complicit in the activity, it could nevertheless recover.
And we haven't had to address that. Unfortunately, this court doesn't have to address that. That would be a difficult issue to brief. I agree with you.
Yeah.
In this case, there's no evidence of that. But what's important is, I think, to note that the defendant, Southwest Bank, in this case, filed an affirmative defense of contributory negligence, which was struck by the trial court, which they don't complain of. And they sought to bring in three responsible third parties, all employees of Information Support Concepts, my client, and only complained here of the trial court's refusal with respect to the thief. The court should remember that they also sought to bring in other employees of the company in order to have their fault compared as well. So they don't argue before this court that these other employees of my client should have been responsible third parties, but if their argument is accepted, then it would make sense that those people then should, if one person's a responsible third party, then all should be responsible third parties.
Do you think the bank has a cause of action against them independently?
I think the bank clearly has a cause of action against the thief, who they're calling the thief, I hate to say it, which is quite like that, but against Kelly Rasko, that they have a cause of action for breach of transfer.
Person is in prison, I take it.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah.
Under the UCC, they clearly have a right of action against her because she's presented an instrument and she's given certain transfer warranties that it's properly endorsed. It was not. They have claims against her. Justice O'Neill asked whether the argument of the petitioners undercuts the UCC. And I think the response was interesting because the petitioners say that if it goes to the jury, then in all likelihood the jury would find some responsibility on the part of the thief and the bank and the employer. And again, that would undercut Section 3.420, which doesn't permit that type of contributory negligence analysis. If the petitioner's argument is to be applied across the board to the UCC, that would potentially create tremendous change in UCC law. It would affect UCC uniformity. Justice Owens asked, how far should we go in applying the proportionate responsibility statute in the way the petitioner wants? And my question would be, if it applies to Article 3, does it apply to Article 9 to secure transactions when we have a cause of action for wrongful disposition of collateral? Are we going to examine whether there were other people that were responsible for that? Will it apply to Chapter 2 sales, the old things that we learned in law school, when goods arrive that are damaged or non-conforming? Are we going to reject, accept? Are we going to cover? Or are we going to start looking for responsible third parties to add as defendants in the litigation, the freight company or something like that? What plaintiffs or petitioners' argument would do for Holder in due course under the UCC is something that the court should consider. In other words, if we're going to take the proportionate responsibility statute and we're going to apply it to any part of the UCC, then the court has to make a decision how far are we prepared to go in that. To date, there are no cases that have applied it in the manner the petitioners seek. And in the legislative history that the petitioners cite, there's no reference to the UCC as something that's going to be effective.
And how many courts have rejected that your opposing counsel's argument? I know New York has. Have there been others?
There have been others. I believe it's cited in one of the briefs, but there is an AOR law review annotation. I believe it's 101 AOR, and I don't recall the page number that deals with these issues in other states. In Texas, I'm aware of two, this case from the Court of Appeals and then the San Antonio case that dealt with UCC warranties.
But the legislature was aware at some point that Chapter 33 could disturb other statutory schemes, so they excluded workers' compensation.
They excluded workers' compensation. They initially didn't include the Deceptive Trade Practices Act, but then they included the Deceptive Trade Practices Act. If the petitioner's argument is correct that it applies to any cause of action that sounds in tort, then clearly the Deceptive Trade Practices Act would have been included by implication, as the petitioners argue the UCC is. But obviously it wasn't, because the legislature came in and added Section H, which has now been moved under House Bill 4, to a new section of the Proportional Responsibility Statute, which requires that it be applied to DTPA cases. If they had intended that to be done in the UCC context, there would have been a Section I, is our argument. And they would not have done it by implication. And Business and Commerce Code Section 1.104 that says that the UCC is a uniform body of law shall not be repealed by implication or implied repeal, we think is important in this case, because especially with a statute such as the UCC, if it was the legislature's intent in 1995 to apply proportional responsibility either across the board or to selected sections of the UCC, we believe that the legislature would have made that clear. It's more problematic now because House Bill 4 has certainly expanded the potential of proportional responsibility and responsible third parties in the future, now allowing defendants to add people whose identities are unknown and who do not have to be joined but whose responsibility will be considered by the trier of fact. So an expansion of the proportional responsibility statute to the UCC will not only bring in situations such as the one that the petitioners argue in this case, but could potentially have UCC commercial transactions filled with potentially responsible parties who are not even a part of the litigation and in some instances whose identities are not even known.
So even though that issue is not before us, it's consistent with your position that those changes in House Bill 4 would not affect the UCC either.
That's correct. And my position that the changes in House Bill 4 won't affect the UCC, and my concern that if proportional responsibility does apply to the UCC, then the changes in House Bill 4 will make that application even more drastic than it was before House Bill 4. I would point out that if the legislature were set on increasing proportional responsibility to apply to the UCC, then House Bill 4 was the perfect avenue to do that, and the legislature did not change the applicability portions of the proportional responsibility by the House Bill 4 amendments.
Where's the comment you said that deals with unendorsed instruments? Or someone did?
It would be in Section 3.420, and I believe it's about Comment 3. The easiest way to find it, it's cited in the Court of Appeals opinion. The Court of Appeals noted that 3.420 intended to apply to this type of case without proportional responsibility because the depository bank was in the best position to know. I did want to briefly address the issues raised in the amicus brief before the court. The brief obviously addresses, and in fact we concur with the applicability of 3.405 and 3.406 as loss allocation sections of the UCC.
Does that show that the assessment of who is in the best position to catch the malfeasance is shifting, that as time passes and the nature of banking changes, that maybe there is a different perception of who is in the best best position to stop it?
I think 3.405 does do that. And understand, that was adopted in 1995, effective January 1st, 1996, and was actually Texas's codification of a 1990 UCC revision. So those aren't new statutes, although they're newer to Texas than they are to some of the other states that have adopted the Uniform Commercial Code. And clearly, there would have to be, and common sense would tell us, that there would have to be a shift in and recognition in the modern-day banking practices to these type of large commercial transactions. What if you look at, and they're not technically in the record, but the amici have attached them, the internet newspaper articles or surveys, if the court looks at those, I think that what you will see in the other materials that have been supplied is that there is more automation going on. Their banks have been protected to a great degree. And for example, in fraudulent endorsements, the banks now share responsibility with the other people. But in this type of case, where there's an absolute missing endorsement, there's a check that's delivered and there's no endorsement, no faked fraud, nothing, except for deposit only written on the back of the check, that in those instances, the bank is not protected, despite modern-day banking practices or automation or anything else. In those instances, the bank should not honor that check. And when they do, and when they pass that check upstream and they collect the funds and distribute them to their depositor, when the check has not been endorsed, then the bank incurs that Section 3.420 liability, all of the automation notwithstanding. The articles that the amici attached talk about a rise in bank fraud and a twofold or fourfold rise in bank fraud claims. The article goes on, though, to show first that the actual losses have not increased because the banks have become more adept at catching these types of things, and good banks catch instruments like were deposited in this case. And then it begins to talk about the different types of bank fraud that have caused the losses, and it ranks them, I think, the top three. And this type of bank fraud, a missing endorsement bank fraud, is not even among the ones that the article talks about. There are other fake identities and things like that. So this, at least by the material submitted by the amici, is not an issue that banks or other banks are dealing with or suffering large losses over, because I think the truth is that other banks are simply catching these things in the way that Southwest Bank did not. Finally, just to remind the court, there is a conditional cross-petition on review in the event that the court determines that this is a situation where this is a tort, or sounds in a common law tort, and proportional responsibility does apply. Then we've asked the court to remand also the issue of exemplary damages. And there was evidence at the summary judgment hearing that Southwest Bank was aware that this was going on, that they had improper rules in place, that they specifically allowed this type of conduct in this case, and they did it willfully and they did it knowingly. And we believe that's an issue that should go to the jury with respect to exemplary damages, which are not recoverable under 3.420. But if this court determines that this is some type of common law claim or subject to proportional responsibility, then we would like that issue remanded so that we can present the additional damages that we believe that we're entitled to. But what we're asking, that's a conditional cross point, what we're asking the court to do is either affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals or dismiss for improper granting. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Again, I'd like to simply go back to where we started here, and that is this. The legislature has decided that any tort claim case that proportion responsibility is
the what law. About the argument that this is a statutory, not a tort claim, because the remedies are different?
Well, I think if you look at what the legislature, they say any duty imposed by law is what section.
Well, but I mean, you'd acknowledge that the UCC conversion looks different from the common law conversion claim. And under common law, you can recover incidental consequential damages, et cetera,
right.
But you can't under the UCC. So why is this not a unique, statutorily created claim?
Again, I think the legislature and the court responsibility said a claim based in tort. This is a claim based in tort. That's the Uniform Commercial Code. They codified common law, the Uniform Negotiable Instruments Act. They all of this, and they took some claim. Obviously, there are contract claims that are incorporated in the UCC and what we do in certain contract claims, what we do in certain tort claims, and how we handle them.
But looking at the juxtaposition in time is another question I have. The the proportionate responsibility statute is older than the now the proportionate responsibility provisions of the UCC. And we've sometimes held that subsequent acts trump previous acts. And I guess you could say they were both amended in 95, but the legislature, we presume, at the time it was amending the Proportionate Responsibility Act in 95 and then first enacting proportionate responsibility in the UCC, knew what it was doing. So why would it need proportionate responsibility in the UCC in 95 if the amendments to 95 and the preceding proportionate responsibility already took care of all this?
Well, what really happened, I don't think the legislature even thought about it. But again, that's a rule of construction, a rule of interpretation of statutes and how you construct it. How you interpret the statutes. I think, you know, the ultimate rule is what did the legislature intend to do here? And I think there's clear. When you've got legislation that is introduced by the governor of the state of Texas to the legislature, it's pretty clear they're really focusing on tort reform, and they want that to be as broad as possible.
But at the same time, they also did separate proportionate responsibility that covered some things in the UCC and not others. So how do we deal with that, given that they're contemporaneous?
Well, again, that's the Uniform Commercial Code. They took a uniform law, adopted and created, back in the late 80s, early 90s, and they applied it. They made some slight modifications based on what the state law of Texas recommended, then they adopted it. But I don't think you could say that if we got to fit proportionate responsibility together with the Uniform Commercial Code, that we can say, well, just because the Uniform Commercial Code happened to be in Chapter 127 and the business and court reform was in Chapter 53 or 74, that, well, automatically it trumps tort reform. And I'd like to address just briefly one other area, and this is this Article 3.420, the comment 3. It talks about, in that case, a depository bank, the comment says, former section 3.419, which is the old former UCC provision dealt with conversion of instruments, said it drew criticism because depository banks had certain defenses that were available to it there. And one of the defenses was, well, to the extent it didn't have any funds on hand anymore, then it wasn't liable as long as it had acted in good faith and commercially reasonable manner. And basically what the old rule did is it pretty much forced the plaintiff to sue the drawee bank, who might be out of state, who might be anywhere, or it might be several of them if several checks were stolen. Obviously what they're doing in the amendment to 3.420 is they're saying you can go directly against the depository bank by the plaintiff in that case. It also goes on to say the depository bank is ultimately liable in the case of a forged endorsement check regardless of the warranty to the payor bank. Now, that statement should have about a zillion caveats to it. One, it's only the drawee bank that has a warranty cause of action. A drawee bank that has a defense under 3.404 or 3.405 that doesn't assert that when it pays to a claimant under a conversion claim is going to have creates a defense in the depository bank when they get sued under the warranty. That's under 4.208. If there is a suit brought by the payee of the check against the drawee bank, what they've got to do is they've got to send a notice within 30 days to the depository bank. Otherwise, there'll be additional defenses to be raised. So they're going to send that right away. So what's going to happen as a practical matter is you're never really going to see 4.208 even come into play, because what's going to happen is the bank's going to go to the drawing bank and say, fine, we'll indemnify and hold you harmless. We'll defend the conversion clause of action. And we'll be back exactly where we would be in this case, which is saying, okay, thief, you're in the lawsuit. Okay, employer or employer's agents, you are responsible. And we allocate the percentages.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the arguments in today's causes. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands.